It's time to get up, get motivated, and start making moves for yourself instead of working to make someone else rich. These are genuine experiences and the stories of real entrepreneurs that made the ultimate decision to live for themselves in order to achieve unbelievable results. You're listening to The Time Is Now, making your business personal. Now here's your host, Kent Clothier.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Kent Clothier here. Glad you have made it. I am joined by my good friend, Garrett Gunderson. Garrett, what's going on, brother?
Hey, man. Just actually kind of living the good life right now, doing a lot of fun stuff. Spent the summer in Italy, just did some football games with the kids. Actually went to a Dodgers game and then a game with the Seahawks since my son loves it. And events, I don't know, hanging out with
friends. Hey, man. I mean, it's good to be you. It's good to be you.
Stand-up comedy. I did stand-up comedy since the last time I saw you. I've done 4 gigs and have 2 more books. So
what?
Yeah. How about that, man?
All right, so you got to tell me all about that. Let's just start there. What the hell? You're doing stand-up comedy at this point. Let's talk about that.
It started as a train wreck in 2006, man, because we're at this formal financial event, and a band finishes playing, and I decide, there's a mic up there. I'm just going to go up there and tell some jokes.
Oh, my.
Does not go well, man. My wife leaves the room in embarrassment, eventually comes back in, says, get off the stage, you're not funny. And then I'm hanging out with her at a baseball game, and I'm just telling her jokes, and she's like, these are funny. Where are you coming up with these? I'm like, I'm just making them up. She's like, that's not bad. And then I go speak at this event, and this guy, Keith Yackey, introduces me. I'm about to give a financial talk, and he's like, oh, dude, our next speaker is super funny. One of the funniest guys you'll meet. And I'm like, what? So,
I'm on.
And people laugh. So it encourages me. And I call my buddy who's a comedian. I'm like, dude, I want to hire you because I'm going to put together a comedy set and do an open mic. And he's like, all right. So a day later, I go meet with him. 2 hours. He's like, you're ready. Wasn't really ready, but I set up an open mic time and I tell a few friends because I don't want to back out. And we have 6 rows of people there. So, dude, I am sweating. I'm going pee like 5 times before I hit the stage.
This is the greatest story I've ever heard.
But then it goes well enough that the comedians are like, hey, man, we have a set coming up in a couple of weeks. You want to open for me? So I do the openings for them, and they go, that was the best openings we've had. And then I'm at this event. I don't know if you know Michael Lovitch and Hollis Carter, but they're running
the
Bathwater event. And the chef's running late, and they're like, hey, dude, you want to go up and do your stand-up set? I'm like, yeah, sure, why not, before a bunch of hungry people.
Oh, my God. Oh my God, this is great. I mean, of all the things we could have talked about, that is literally probably on the very bottom. Bring a financial guy on, I bring a best-selling author on, and we decided we're going to lead with, hey, I'm doing comedy now.
I decided to make me a better speaker, a better podcaster,
hey, you know what? That's actually probably a really good point, right? I mean, the moment you know how to do that, they say some of the best copywriting books out there, which obviously writing copy and using persuasion and that kind of stuff, they talk a lot about the value in being able to have comedic timing and being able to actually do stand-up comedy events. So that's actually probably really good that this is coming around.
Yeah, my wife's like, I see it in your eyes. Just like, you know, she knows the entrepreneur. She's like, this is an addiction. The next thing you know, you're going to be like, hey, we're going to Wyoming this weekend for a stand-up gig. And I'm like, no. And then sure enough, they're like, hey, we're doing a gig in Grand Junction, Colorado. I'm like, dude, I got family in Grand Junction. I tell my wife, I'm like, right after Thanksgiving, I got us 4 flights to Grand Junction. We're taking the kids. You guys are going to watch me do a 20-minute stand-up. So she goes, I told you, I called.
Exactly.
It's just a hobby, baby. It's just a hobby.
That's how it always starts, man. That's how it always starts. So, dude, let's talk for a second about, give everybody a little bit of your background outside of comedy. Right here. Give everybody a little bit of taste of who you are. You know, talk about the Wealth Factor, talk about the book, all that kind of good stuff here real quick.
Yeah, I started my first official business when I was 15. And I say official because I think every business I had before I was 15 was more about like family extortion than it was about a real business. Like, like grandma and grandpa had to let me mow the lawn and pay me for it.
Exactly. Exactly.
My dad, being a coal miner, would bring home the surface mine vehicles and clean them when the bosses were in town. I helped him do it one day. He's like, hey, you're not bad at this. So he's like, why don't you come up and talk to my boss and maybe we can get you a contract. And my mom worked at a credit union and I went and talked to her boss. So I just started detailing cars. And then 6 months after doing that, I did my first business competition. It was called SIFE, Students in Free Enterprise, where I showed up and I won the Rural Young Entrepreneur of the Year, which was $500, man. And my business had only done $600 in net income. So I became a speaker that day, Ken. I was like, hey, dude, wash cars or speak.
That's great.
So that was the start, because then I won $5,000 being the Young Entrepreneur of the Year for the state of Utah. And dude, from a coal mining town, I thought $5,000 was a lot of money. So I actually wanted to take that money and invest it. I thought it was substantial, but my mom wouldn't even sign like as a custodian, because our money management method for the Italian side of the family was actually Folgers coffee cans.
Yeah.
Where you put cash in it and put it in the cellar. And that was legitimately how we did it.
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so finally, when I was 18, I could invest. So I made a mistake with my first investment. I put money in the stock market, but making bad worse, I put it inside of an insurance plan that was 20% more expensive than a regular insurance plan in the stock market that was going to earn, according to the people that pitched me, 18% a year for the rest of my life, conservatively. And within 3 months, I figured out, because I was in econometrics in college, I figured out through a Monte Carlo simulation, being the nerd that I was, that was not going to be the case. But that began my financial journey, because I started asking questions and started interviewing people in the financial world and got offered an internship, which sounds kind of cool. But here's what the internship really was. Bring your family and friends to us so we can peddle them investments that are commissionable. And I did that for 2 years in the year 98 and 99, where I was seen as the financial Einstein of my little community, because they had double E bonds and coffee cans, right? So everybody made money in the market during those times. But in the year 2000, that's where my financial education began, because the market started to go down. And I didn't want to tell people the cliched statements of, oh, you're in it for the long haul, or the market's on sale, or dollar cost average, or all that kind of stuff that gets spewed out. And I had this mentor, Steve Harrop, who managed $5 billion, and he was a professor now, who helped me kind of guide me through the conversation, tell everybody I didn't know what the hell I was doing. They should get their money out of the market and wait for me to either figure out something better or go find another advisor, which, dude, I may have been young, but I had a huge ego. That was so painful. And we saved people hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I say hundreds of thousands because I didn't have that much money under management. It should have been millions, but I was just kind of beginning. And I went through a 2-year, 2-month process every single month, traveling somewhere to figure out what is it that's guaranteed in the world of finance. And I only whispered that because you're not allowed to say the word guarantee in finance.
Right.
I think it's the same sentence. But that's where I really started to focus on efficiency. I became really good at tax strategy and cash flow optimization and looking at insurances, whether were duplicate coverages or costs, or finding hidden fees and commissions within the investment world. And I made this declaration that I was going to make more money by being an investor than selling investment advice, which was a great kind of initial statement. But it did get me in a little bit of trouble, because I invested almost every dollar I made into all these crazy things like oil and gas deals. I did hard money lending fund that I started up. I did IPOs. I did a whole bunch of stuff, and I made some money and I could brag about that, but I also got my ass kicked on a lot of things. And I think what made me kind of who I am today is I was willing to admit my mistakes, learn the lessons from it, and have this infinite curiosity to continue to ask questions and navigate the process. So that's kind of a fast forward, but I think Killing Sacred Cows, when I wrote that book, I was still in my 20s, and people said, man, how did you write something when you're so young that you know, seems like there's some wisdom to it? I'm like, because I admitted my mistakes. I didn't say I had 20 years experience, which was 1 year's experience 20 times over. I didn't justify away, oh, it's just what happens when the market goes down. And by asking the questions and kind of going through the process, it was almost like a confessional writing that book. Like, here were the biggest things that really cost me that are really subtle lies that people believe about finance. But if you can understand them and navigate them, it's almost like permission to succeed for people. It didn't put all the pieces together, but it helped them to detect some of the things that were invisible before.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, that's the beauty of the book, is it kind of clears up a lot of the myths, a lot of the, takes away some of the fuzziness, right? I mean, it really, there's a lot of stuff that people believe, myself included, that after I read the book, it was just like, man, this is very refreshing. It's kind of nice to have somebody kind of give it to you raw and uncut and a little unfiltered and draw your attention to something that maybe it was just easier to ignore. It's probably the best way to say it.
Yeah. The whole foundation of that book really begins with, I think, what you would agree is the most important piece, which is our perspective, our mindset, our viewpoint. Because I don't care how much luck someone has, or savings, or discipline, or financial team, or any of that, right? How hard they work. If they're in the scarcity mindset, they're going to find a way to destroy or give away wealth unnecessarily.
Right. Let's talk about the wealth factor here for a minute. So how did it get you to the place you are today, right? You're recognized as an industry leader, a thought leader, somebody that really has helped to educate a lot of different, I mean, you speak at many, many different types of conferences, and kind of the messaging is the same over and over again. How did all of this come about? How did this latest iteration of you kind of come about in your company?
Yeah, I had three business partners that we formed basically a study group in 2001. And we'd get together on Fridays and just be talking finance. And then we decided to create own firms, but we combined branding and created this firm Ingenuity. And we were the guys that were a bit annoying sometimes. We go to events and we're the ones asking a bunch of questions. But at the same time, we built a lot of great relationships through that because we were so inquisitive. And one of my partners, Les, was very philosophical. So a lot of times the instructors would come talk to both of us in between. And then in 2005, we started realizing no matter how much money we help people gain, if they didn't really address their mindset and they didn't really understand kind of like who they were, all this other stuff was on the peripheral. And we created this kind of like a membership and an educational forum. And we started doing one day events. And they died about a year later in a plane crash. We had a company plane. They left St. George, Utah to fly back to Provo, Utah and hit some wind shears. And so at that point, it was kind of like for 4 months, I lived my life for them and their legacy. And when I finally was like, okay, like the best way to live my life or really honor their legacy is to build my own. That's when I created a program called Freedom Fast Track between November of 2006 and really April of 2007. And this was a one-on-one service that I really identified early on when I was 22 years old, when I went to a family office in New York City. And I saw like all these financial people around a table, attorneys, accountants, investment advisors, cash flow specialists, risk managers. And I was like, dude, this is like real due diligence. This is really amazing. And I saw that you had to be worth at least $50 million to be part of it. So my brain kicked in. I was like, first fascinated, then frustrated. I was like, I'm going to build this for entrepreneurs that most of their money is tied up in their business, or they have an idea that they're investing everything back into and they aren't worth $50 million. And that was naive, but also ambitious. So it took me about 10 years to build that. And the first rendition of it really came out in 2007 called Freedom Fast Track. And it was also the name that I ended up naming the company because Ingenuity, with my partners dying, it was just easier to kind of say, look, I'll just take the main program, name it Freedom Fast Track. But then in 2012, I just kind of had this feeling like, okay, 2010 had been our biggest year. We did hit the Inc. 500 a few years before that. And I was like, we're not really making a dent. I really feel like we're doing okay for the people we're serving one-on-one. But I was really fascinated with how can we get a million entrepreneurs to economic independence in a place where they had a recurring revenue to cover their basic, you know, lifestyle expenses. What would that take? And that's when we became Wealth Factory, because I found a firm that had done 50,000 financial education systems online. Like people had bought. I was like, that's amazing. So they had a marketing team and they had copywriters. And I was like, I want to get there. So I bought that. I bought that team and renamed it Wealth Factory. Still our flagship program one-on-one is Freedom Fast Track. And sometimes we call it the Fast Track to Economic Independence. But now we have digital, you know, portfolio of video systems and newsletters and all this kind of stuff that we never had before to reach more of the masses and still do our one-on-one program. And that was good enough that I got picked up by Forbes to write 5 articles a month. And I'm doing a bit more speaking, whether it's podcasts or showing up to the right events, because I love what I do. And I really enjoy making finance more fun and hell, adding some comedy to it. So it's not dry or drab or boring, right?
Right.
I love working with the entrepreneur because I'm cut from that same cloth, that whole kind of story that I'm sharing with you. So Wealth Factory was the right kind of entity for us to kind of be the shining example of how can we help people get economic independence and give them the right tools and resources, accountability, mentoring, you know, financial team. So, yeah.
So an entrepreneur comes into your world right now. And so you got a guy that's out there, he's doing $5-10 million in sales. like you, I mean, I know a million guys like this, and I know you do too, and girls, that they've busted their ass. They've got a business that's going. The business owns them.
Yep.
But not in a bad way. I mean, they're just very passionate about it. To your point, they're pouring everything they've got back into it, time, effort, energy, money, all of it. And then they come into your world. What could that person expect to learn from coming into your world? What, I mean, what's the experience? What is the objective? What's the outcome?
Five main things that they're going to do. And the main outcome is to achieve economic independence, which is different than financial freedom. Financial freedom is a term that's abused in the financial world that doesn't usually have a lot to do with financial freedom. To me, financial freedom is when money's not the primary reason or excuse why someone does or doesn't do something. It's a consideration, but it's not the primary consideration. Economic independence is where we have enough entrepreneurial income and investment income. And entrepreneurial income is that income that shows up even if you don't go to work the next day. So you still have to maintain it and manage it and monitor it, but it is an active income, right? When that covers your basic expenses, then you've got a solid financial foundation. And so we have five main things we focus on to achieve that.
Hey, this is Kent, and thanks for listening to the show. Just wanted to give you a quick heads up. If you're interested in real estate investing and looking for a way to get started, go to thetimeisnow.com. Right there on the page, you'll see an opportunity to just log in and get a free copy of my best-selling book. It's a great way to get started, learn a lot about one of our most basic strategies in real estate called wholesaling, reverse wholesaling to be specific, exactly how you can get started right now. Got a whole list of resources in there, step-by-step instructions, everything you need. Again, go check it out at thetimeisnow.com.
First one is showing entrepreneurs how to keep more of the money that they make. So we do that through what I would call four I's. Get money back from the IRS, which 93% of them overpay. Get money back from interest, which is part of the cash flow optimization process by restructuring, renegotiating, or getting the right connections or the right credit score or the right cash flow reporting to keep more of what they make there. Investments, where a lot of people have too much risk on the downside or too many fees that are a headwind against them. So we help them detect that and then kind of put that money back in their pocket. And then insurance, where they have duplicate coverages or improper structure or unnecessary exposure. So IRS, interest, insurance, and investments, those are the four I's, are the main focus of helping them keep more of what they make. The second thing is we help them identify their economic independence number and then strategically engineer their wealth, which is reverse engineering. What is the plan or the map of how they build the proper foundation where everything works together, the property safety measures so they have sustainability, and then focus on growth in one key area, which is their investor DNA. What helps them become a better investor? What things can they really dive into and focus instead of diversify so they get better growth, which might be investing back in their business. It might be choosing that they're going to use real estate as their primary vehicle. It might mean that they stop doing options trading that they knew very little about and they were dabbling in. It might mean, like, we just want them to really focus in.
Get and focused.
The third thing is then we help them accelerate investment income. Where do they have stagnant assets or lazy assets? So assets that aren't producing cash flow, we want to turn that cash flow on. And then the fourth thing is a huge thing that's game changing, which is help them scale their business revenue. As there's more money that now can flow into their business, they're being more efficient with it. What things are going to help them improve their business? It might be hiring someone. It might be simply building a certain process or structure. It might be helping them delegate more properly. And then the fifth piece is to really make it count. So help them figure out what their legacy is for the future, but help them live more of that legacy today so they have a scorecard other than just their money that they're identifying with so that they can live wealthy, not just wait one day to be wealthy. Because I love the Benjamin Franklin quote that wealth isn't just the man that has it, but the man that lives it. So we help them really identify relaxation, rejuvenation, and recreation as part of their daily living. And they have many retirements and forget retirement altogether in the future because it's retirement's death, right?
Right, so, right. No doubt. Yeah. Dude, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Where does somebody start in the process of reaching out to you, getting in your world, kind of figuring out stuff? I know we're going to, I'll mention it again at the end, but where would somebody start with you?
Wealthfactory.com/private has just eight questions that have us understand a little bit about the individual, and then we can match them up to the right people on our team based upon which program might make sense. Or they can go to wealthfactory.com and just kind of navigate, or wealthfactory.com/megakit is probably the coolest thing we have. because the mega kit's all about more cash flow for entrepreneurs. And over 7 months, they get seven major tools over that 7 months that they can implement. So the cash flow guide for entrepreneurs, or the investment scorecard, which is all about how they lower their risk and understand how to do real due diligence, or getting one of my books would be one of the things. So it's just a way for us to really build a relationship. It's all things that we're giving them and contributing. And then obviously, the more they see who we are, the more they can choose whether they want to connect on a deeper level, because then we have one-on-one workshops that we host 53 people on at a time. And when I say one-on-one, meaning we've got 15 people on our team for 50 people in attendance. So it is very much roll up your sleeves, no outside speakers, dive in, where are they set, where are they not set, where's their financial blind spots, what's their economic independence number, where are specific ways they could scale their business. Like, we do those every single month right now. And that's really a great gateway to everything that we do, because if someone wants to do it on their own, they can come to the workshop and we give them the map. If they want us to help them do the heavy lifting, they can hire us and work with us afterwards. And a lot of times we have them bring someone on their financial team, because their financial team ends up loving us, because we're not trying to, we don't manage money. We don't put people in the stock market ever. Our job is to help do due diligence and build cash flow. And so we're different than most financial firms that way.
I love it, dude. All right. So let's switch gears here. So you're starting off, obviously, we heard a little bit about your story, and you've gone through some serious situations. That I mean, when you talk about your partners dying in a plane crash, yeah, and what have you, if you were going to share one big lesson, you're looking back at, you know, and you had to talk to your 22-year-old self here, what would be the one big lesson you would say really sticks with you and that you would want to make sure that you drove home?
Big lesson that I would want to tell my 22-year-old self is that not everyone defines integrity the same way as me or as you, right? And what this means is that I could do something for someone and that would be great, and I'm not expecting them to owe me for the rest of my life. But there's people that have done things for me years ago, decades ago, that they use that as a way to leverage me for the rest of my life. And I allowed that abuse because of whether it was a lack of self-confidence or whether it was not having the proper rules of engagement. And I really felt like the book Give and Take was helpful from Adam Grant to realize that there were times where I allowed takers to be takers and it was destroying my ability to be of value. Because I have this kind of mantra that dollars follow value, and that in this world, we want to be value creators. But it's not value creation if someone else is abusing or just taking advantage of that. So I could think of three relationships that have cost me where I got a lot of this gray hair, where I had a lot of sleepless nights. The very simple advice I would have given myself is choose your friends and choose who you're going to be friendly with. Friends are those people you invite into your life and you say yes to their invitations. People you're going to be friendly with, it doesn't require major altercations and drama. You just simply say no in a nice way. You never shine someone on, and you never say yes to their invitations or ever invite them into your life. So I don't share my vision with people I'm friendly with. These are people who might not be good people. There might be people that aren't even bad people. They're just not people I share the same values with, because I want to reserve that time for myself, to take care of my health, to enjoy life, to spend time with family. And we're in a world where the inbox is easily cluttered and people can hijack your time if you don't have really clear-cut kind of structures. And so to me, there's three people, if I would have chosen the friendly path with instead of being friends with, I would have had a much easier life. I learned some major lessons from it. But really, I was constantly doing for them, and they knew that integrity was a buzzword and they were leveraged. Oh, integrity, integrity. But integrity is a two-way street. If one person breaks it, you don't sit there and keep holding up your end of the agreement when they haven't held up theirs. It's a broken agreement, and you either create a new agreement or you exit the agreement. And I stayed strong on my side, thinking that was keeping my word. But no, that wasn't keeping my word. That was being foolish.
Wow. Dude, you just said a mouthful there, brother. That was a serious, serious answer. I love it too. So basically, normally through this interview process, I would be, you know, peppering you with questions. The reality of it is that your stories and what you've done so far, I mean, it's kind of unnecessary. You shared a ton of golden nuggets already here in the about 20 minutes. So kind of starting to bring this to a head, what's the best advice that's ever been shared with you?
Best advice ever shared with me.
Business or otherwise.
Yeah. I remember being 22 years old and I someone I really admired, I was like, look, I'm young. I want to have a great life. I want to do great things. What would you recommend? And this is such simple advice, but it was so profound on me. He goes, when you're with people you trust and they make a recommendation to you about improving your education, about personal development, about some book to read, just make the investment if you can pay cash for it. So I have looked from that day forward as investments being ideas and people more than stocks and bonds. And that has absolutely had a huge impact on my cash flow, on my enjoyment of life, because I actually relate to the value when I build value for people. When I put my money in a stock, I don't really know whether it's, I don't know what it's doing in the world or not. So right. I just look at investing so differently now. And I've pretty much paid six figures a year for well over a decade now, and at least $40,000 a year from the time I got out of college towards education, masterminds, mentoring, accountability, like just ways to advance and get things a whole lot quicker. And some people don't like to spend money on that because it doesn't show up in a bank account, but as it does show up as dividends, as cash flow, as someone there for you when you need something, when you're stuck. Because I also just really felt like good advice that the person gave me was, don't try to do it all on your own and don't fake it when you're not doing well. Go to people you respect as peers or as mentors and just tell them the truth. They're not going to demean you. They're actually going to respect you for it, and you're going to get unstuck a lot faster. So anytime I have bouts of scarcity, I call someone that's a peer and I just let them know, or a mentor, or I call someone that I really, really love spending time with. And rather than bitching and moaning about the situation I'm going through, I simply ask them what's going on in their life and find out one place where I can either make a connection or deliver direct value for them. And it immediately improves my mindset, the level of appreciation I have for myself. And so just, I really felt like investing in myself first and always has been, like, it's so simple, but it's so profound.
And it's usually the thing that people do the last. I mean, it's not, it's very rare. I think you probably find the exact same thing, you know, in all your travels, that the people I have the most respect for, my mentors, my peers, colleagues, they do exactly the same, right? They are constantly investing in themselves, investing in people, investing in situations that are continuing to improve and grow their network, grow their opportunity, grow their kind of perspective, quite frankly. You know, a lot of times it's just as simple as like what you and I just sitting down and having dinner and getting to know each other and figuring out where the synergies are. Those investments, time and time again, not only have paid huge for me, but again, they've paid so big for just about everybody that I really respect. You'll watch them do this repeatedly, but you watch the people that have that small mindset, that scarcity mindset, and you watch those people and rarely works out for them. Rarely works out. It does in some cases, but man, it's a much harder road traveled that way. So Garrett, how does everybody get in touch with you? Wealthfactory.com/megakit. Is that it?
Totally. You can also text 44222 and the word wealthier, and then get both my books, Killing Sacred Cows and What Would the Rockefellers Do, on me. And that'll actually get them into the megakit as well if they want.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. That's awesome. We'll make sure we put all of this in the show notes. And I can tell you, dude, this has been great, man. I mean, that flew by fast. It's one of those where, again, just kind of took off. We both jumped on a rocket ship there really quickly. That was great. That was fantastic. Great advice. I appreciate you sharing with everybody. And we'll definitely have you back on here for another segment here sooner rather than later and start sharing with some more stuff. Get down in deep on some other topics here as well. We're also going to have Garrett out to one of our live events here very soon, so be on the lookout for that. And then, again, go to wealthfactory.com and check out all the great stuff, or text to, was it 44222, wealthier?
Yep.
44222, text wealthier, and Garrett will get you all set up. Brother, I appreciate you, man.
Hey, I really appreciate you, man. Thanks for letting me talk comedy too. You know, starting with comedy, I'm fascinated with it right now. I'm doing a set tomorrow night, actually. So
good luck, man. Good luck. Let us know how it turns out.
All right.
See you, brother.
You've reached the end of this episode, but there's plenty more for you over at thetimeisnow.com, where you can sign up for our free mailing list to help you make the next big shift in your career. As always, we'll see you next time on the Time Is Now podcast, where your business is personal.